Penguin Random House Audio presents The Vanished Birds by Simon Jimenez. Read for you by Shayna Small. Part 1. Chapter 1. Six Harvests. He was born with an 11th finger, a small bead of flesh and bone beside his right pinky. The doctor calmed the worried parents and told them the nub was a harmless thing. But still, he said, unlacing a small cloth pouch, a farmer needs only 10 fingers to work the duba. He coaxed the child to sleep with the smoke of torched herbs and sliced the nub from the hand with a cauterizing knife. And though the mother knew her baby felt no pain in his medicated sleep, she winced when the flesh was parted and clutched him to her breast, praying that there would be no memory of the hurt when he woke, while her husband, unable to resist indulging in his hedonism even then, breathed deep the doctor's herb smoke and was spelled by a vision of the future. In his dilated pupils, his son, a full-grown man, handsome and powerful, with a big house at the top of the hill, the new governor of the fifth village. To commemorate this vision, he had the finger boiled of its flesh and its bones placed in a corked glass jar, which he shook on wistful days, listening to the clack of good almonds as he whispered to his baby, "You are going to run this place one day." The boy burbled in his arms, too young to recognize the small and varied ways life was contriving to keep him put. They called him Kata, the old name of this world. Kata grew up proud of the scar on his right hand, the shape of it changing over the years. When he was 7, the healed tissue rippled down the side of his palm like a troubled river. He was happy to show the other children the mark when he was asked, and he giggled as they stroked the skin with furrowed brows, at once impressed and unnerved by its texture. Some children called him cursed. Those were the children who learned from their parents to distrust the unusual. To them, he shoved his scar under their noses and confronted them with the fact of it, repeating the words of his father, "I'm going to run this place one day," and through sheer force of will, convinced them that the scar on his hand was a lucky thing. He had a natural charisma. The caretakers doted on him, and the other kids played the games he wanted to play, believed what he believed. Everyone but a girl named Jige, who never missed an opportunity to push back against his wild declarations, matching pride with pride as she countered his wild theories on why the sky was red and why the smell of the air changed during the day, why everything smelled soft and sweet in the morning and sour as a kiri fruit at dusk.
"And your scar isn't special," Jige shouted. "It just means you were born wrong."
They wrestled in the yellow grass until the caretaker separated them. They fought like dogs most days, but despite the bruises he might nurse on the way home, he always emerged from the fights unbothered, certain that she was only jealous that it was he who was destined for greatness and not her, though what greatness that was he did not know and would not until the day the off-worlders arrived. Before that day, he was only familiar with the stories his parents shared, how every 15 years, the off-worlders broke the sky with their cloth and metal ships and landed in the plains east of the village to collect the harvest of duba seeds. His father told him that this special day was called Shipment Day, and that on every shipment day, a great party was held for both the off-worlders and the farmers.
"A party you will never forget," he promised.
His mother laughed from the other room.
"Unless you drink too much."
"The drink is half the fun," his father countered.
Kata was unable to sleep the night before his first shipment day. His mind was too alive with the stories, the new faces he would see, the new hands not stained purple from the duba fields. He gazed through his small bedroom window at the black sky, littered with stars, with no regard for the late hour, as he imagined what it would be like to leap from light to light, what places there were on the other side.
When his mother came to collect him in the morning, he was exhausted, all his energy spent the night before conjuring these fantasies. He dragged his feet into his sandals and complained loudly as they marched with the other villagers to the plains east of the town, begging for rest until his father sighed and carried him on his back, where he drifted in and out, unaware of time or location, only the warm and thick smell of the man's shoulder, like the embers of a dying fire. He slept, and then the sky cracked, and he woke up with a shriek, and his father laughed and pointed upward, and he followed his father's finger up to where, against the slate of red sky, 12 thin green lines arced above the horizon line, the endpoints gaining in size until, not 2 minutes later, the giant metallic beast touched down on the carpet of grass with ground-shaking thumps. One after another, the vibrations attacking his heart, swollen now as it occurred to him that he had never seen such large creations, nothing as intricate as their cloth wings and the hull panels that gleamed under the sun, or the sonic boom of their hangar doors that dropped onto the dirt like jaws mid-shout, or the people who emerged from within of every variant shade of skin, some lighter than his, others darker, dressed in clothing that seemed woven out of the stuff of starlight. With a nauseous rush, the scope of his world telescoped outward to accommodate the breadth of these awesome quantities. His whole body shivered, and then he pissed himself. His father cursed and lowered him to the ground, cringing at the stain on his back. The offworlders were shown to the banquet cushions in the center of the fifth village. Bowls of spirits and plates of Duban pastries, long, purple, and flaky, were served on wide platters. Kata could not see the off-worlders from where he sat, a minor disappointment, as he stuffed himself with sweetbreads and bowls of juice, feeling warm and content between the motions of his parents' bodies, pleased by the sound of hard snaps when his mother cracked open nuts with her muscular fingers, and the bellow of his father's drunken, joyful laugh. He felt a satisfaction with the world, so complete he even smiled at Jige, who was with her own family on the other end of the long table, and she, startled, returned his smile with a small wave of her own before turning back to her uncle, who was in the midst of another tall tale about the butcher beast of the southern forest. Horror stories, with which the young would startle themselves awake later that night and stare into the dark corners of their bedrooms, waiting to be devoured. The adults exploded with laughter. After the banquet, when the hard drinking began, the caretakers and new parents brought the children back to their homes. But Kata wasn't finished with the night. He had yet to meet an off-worlder, so he planned his escape from the group. He told his friend Sato to lie to the caretakers and say that he had run home ahead of them, and before Sato could so much as nod, the boy was gone, hugging the side of the squat buildings, back to the bonfire and the harsh scent of liquor. It was there, at the end of the alley, before the path opened up into the plaza, that he saw her, a woman, alone on a bench, silhouetted by the fire. She held a wooden flute to her lips, her fingers spidered up and down the length of the instrument, playing music that reminded Kata of the sound of wind whistling through a cracked open door. He watched her from the shadows. Even sitting down, she seemed tall. She was black-skinned, her hair shaved to the scalp, and was dressed in an outfit simpler than her friend's. A white top, with the collar cut down to the chest bone and dark bottoms that hugged the curves of her legs. Each note she played on her flute made the bonfire ahead of them dance. Or maybe it was the fire that was influencing the music, or the stars, or all of it, working in concert together. The song was the night itself. It was in his people's laughter as they danced by the fire. And it was in the smell of fruit and smoke in the air. It was in the light caught in the beads of sweat on her collarbone. It was everywhere. The woman's breath flumed through the wooden tube and bellowed heat into his belly, gladly mesmerizing him until her large eyes shot up and saw him.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?